Today's shiur is Masechta Menachos Daf Tzadik Vav, and we will begin on Daf Tzadik Vav Amud Aleph at the top of the Amud at the Mishnah. As we have discussed many times, the Kohen Gadol had to bring every day a Minchas Chavitim made of an Isorin Silas, which was divided in two. Half was brought in the morning and half was brought Ben Habayim. Begins our Mishnah teaching us that the Chavite Kohen Gadol Rishosan V'Arichosan V'Afiyosan B'Fnim, both the preparation of the Minchas Chavitim and the baking were done in the Azara itself. And there are a number of Pshatim and Rishonim as to why they were done, why it was done in the Azara itself, unlike the Shtei HaLechem and the Lechem Aponim, which we discussed in our previous shiur, did not certainly have the preparation done in the Azara. Rashi explains, because as we just said, the Isorin that was used for the Kavim Mincha was divided in two. Half was brought in the morning and half in the afternoon. And Rashi says that the Chatzi Isorin Keli was a Kli Shares, and therefore since it was a Shares, the Avodah was done in the Azara. Of course, the question is, as we learned in our previous year, and as we learned previously, the Sorin was not a Kli Sharis. And therefore, the question is, why is the Chatzi Sorin a Kli Sharis and the Sorin not a Kli Sharis? So, Mefarshim explained, because since the Sorin was used for all types of Korban Mincha, and therefore there's a concern when somebody is bringing such a Korban Mincha, there's a concern that they may end up using the Isorin outside the Azara. So they were specifically not Mekadesh the Isorin. The Chatzi Isorin, which was used exclusively for the Lechem Aponim, there wasn't such a concern, and because there wasn't such a concern, that's why they used the Chatzi Isorin was Miskadesh. However, other Rishonim disagree with this approach, because they say it doesn't seem correct to say that the Sarn, the Chatzi Sarn, which we learned in our, earlier in our Masechta, are the only two Kalim that are used for Midas Hayovish, that were used for drawing material, should be treated differently, that the Sarn not being Kaddish and the Chatzi Sarn being Kaddish. And therefore, Tosfos and other Rishonim take a very different approach. And their approach is that since we know that in the Chavite Kohen Gadol they had to use oil, and as we've learned, oil is Miskadesh B'Kli Halach, and the Kli Halach were Kli Kodesh, any Korban Mincha that had in it oil, and therefore became Miskadesh because of the oil, there the Halacha is that they did it in the Azara. That's why the Mishnah teaches us that all of the preparation and the baking of the Kohen Gadol's Chavitin were done in the Azara proper. And therefore, since the baking was done in the Azara in Kli Sharis, if it's going to be baked before Shabbos, the Chavite Kohen Gadol were brought on Shabbos as well. If they're going to be baked before Shabbos, they'll become possible with Lina. Therefore, they're baking Doiches a Shabbos, override Shabbos. However, Tchinosan of Arkadosan, the grinding and the sifting of the flour used for the Chavite Kohen Gadol, since that can be done before Shabbos, and a Doiches a Shabbos, and not Doiches Shabbos. Klal Amar Rekiva, because Rav Akiva makes the following rule. Kol Malach She'ef Shal Asos Me'er Shabbos, anything that could be done before Shabbos, and a Doiches Shabbos, is not Doiches Shabbos. She'ef Shal Asos Me'er Shabbos, but what cannot be done before Shabbos, Doiches Shabbos. And therefore, as we explained, the baking can't be done before Shabbos, so it's Doiches Shabbos. The sifting of the flour can be done before Shabbos, and that's why it's not Doiches Shabbos. Continues the Mishnah speaking about regular Korban Minchas, Kol Menachos, all Korban Minchas, Yesh Ma'aser Keil B'Fnim, their Avodah was done in the Azara, Vein Ma'aser B'Keil B'Chutz. Everything was done in the Azara, nothing was done outside the Azara. because klisharis were used, and since klisharis were used, every time a klisharis is used, the avodah, as we've been learning, has to be done in the azara. Shtei alechem teaches us the Mishnah. What were the dimensions of the shtei alechem? Archon, their length was shivat tefachim. For rochvan, and their width were abat tefachim. For karnaseha, there were horns protruding on the four corners, arbat spars. Each corner horn was four spars tall. That's what most Rishonim learned. The Rambam seems to learn that this refers to the height of the shtei alechem, but that's not the way most Rishonim learn. Lechem aponim. What were the dimensions of the lechem aponim? Arba as tefachim. Arkan asar tefachim. Their length was 10 tefachim. Rachvan, their width were 5 tefachim. The karnaseha and the corners were shevat spas. Rav Yehuda says, shleiteta, in order that one should not get confused between the dimensions of the shtei alechem and the lechem aponim, he gives us the following simonim, Zedad and Yahaz. Zedad is the shtei alechem, which was 7 tefachim long, 4 tefachim wide, and the corners of 4 tzbaz high. And Yahaz is the lechem aponim, which was 10 tefachim long, 5 tefachim wide, and 7 tzbaz tall. The Bar Tanura tells us, Rabbi Yehuda is the man da omer throughout Shas, who always makes simonim, as we know from the Haggadah, Rabbi Yehuda ha-yunaisman simonim, tetzach adash b'achab, and therefore here too, he gives simonim. However, the Mefarshim ask that a simonim have to be, the purpose of a simon is to be a memory aid, to help us remember. These simonim that the Mishnah are giving us are not simonim that will make it any easier to remember. And therefore they don't understand what is the purpose of these simonim. So some Mefarshim take the approach that simonim are given even if the simonim don't really have any independent meaning. However, there are many Mefarshim that disagree, and they say that simonim are given only when they have an explanation. So how do we understand these simonim that are given here in the Mishnah? So I saw two pshatim. One pshat that I saw is that the point Rabbi Yehuda is trying to make is that the dimensions of the lechem aponim are larger than the dimensions of the shtei alechem. And therefore, zedad is the shtei alechem, which is a total of 15, versus yahaz, which is a total of 22, to teach us that the lechem aponim was larger than the shtei alechem. Adam Mefarshim explained Rabbi Yehuda Simon, zedad means zedad. This is like a nipple. Just like a nipple gives nourishment to the child, so too the shtei halechem bring nourishment, bring panosa to Klal Yisrael. And Yahaz means is a abbreviation for hoizim shoysim. As we're just about to learn, the shlechem aponim were lying on the shulchan. And to teach us this halacha, that the lechem aponim had to be lying, they used this simon. Ben Zayma Omer, the pasuk says, "V'nasata al shulchan lechem ponim lefonai tamid." Lechem ponim. What is the lechem ponim? What does the word ponim mean? She'elei ponim. It has a number of surfaces. As we just finished learning, there were very specific dimensions to the surfaces. There's a very interesting psak from the Yaivitz in his sefer Moruk Tzia. There's a question that comes up on Shabbos: if there are letters on a cake, may one cut that cake on the letters? Is it considered mechika, stira? And the Yaivitz wants to distinguish between letters that are written on a cake, icing that's put on a cake, versus letters that are baked into the cake, whether there's engraved into the cake or they're sticking out of the cake, that they're part of the actual baking of the cake. Those kind of letters, the Yaivitz suggests there would be no question, may be cut on Shabbos. And his raya, is because the Torah speaks about the lechem aponim, and the lechem aponim, he suggests, means that there was a certain design to the lechem aponim, and even though there was a certain design to the lechem aponim, the Gemara is teaching us, the Torah teaches us, that the Kohanim ate the lechem aponim on Shabbos without being concerned of any question of Chil Shabbos. However, the Paiskim take issue with the Yavetz's Raya, because as our Mishnah just taught us, the definition of lechem aponim is not that it had a specific design, but rather that it had a specific dimensions, and therefore we don't have any specific raya that the lechem aponim had a design that would teach us that one could break something with a design on Shabbos. Continues the Mishnah, Hashulchan, the dimensions of the Shulchan, the Torah says, were 2 amos in the length and 1 amma in the width. Now, an amma, as we're going to see now in the Mishnah and in Mitzvah Shem in the Gemara, could be made up either of 5 tefachim or of 6 tefachim. Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, which is the first opinion stated here in the Mishnah, is that the amma that the Shulchan was made up of was an amma of 5 tefachim. And therefore, if, as we just said, the length of the Shulchan was 2 amma, that means it was a total of 10 tefachim. And if the width of the Shulchan was 1 amma, that is 5. Lechem aponim, we learned earlier in our Mishnah, and this everybody agrees to, that the dimensions of the lechem aponim were arkay asar v'rach v'chamisha, 10 tefachim long by 5 tefachim wide. So how did the lechem fit into the Shulchan? Nosin arkay k'neged rach v'shul Shulchan. The Kohen puts the length of the lechem aponim across the width of the Shulchan, which will leave us with 5 tefachim sticking out, because as we just said, according to Yehuda, the width of the Shulchan was 5 tefachim, the length of the lechem was 10 tefachim, so we have an overage of 5 tefachim. The Kaifel, so therefore he says what they did was, the Kaifel tefachim machz mikan, they bent up. Again, we're going to learn the Mishnah with the pshat that the lechem aponim was a flat surface with the 2 sides sticking up. They bent up the lechem aponim 2.5 tefachim on each side. Machlokes Rishonim, when they bent it, did they bend it and bake it that way? They bent it when it was dough, or was it bent after it was baked? The Kaifel Tefachayim Mechts Mekan, Tefachayim Mechts Mekan, Nimtza. So now we have the Orchoy, the length of the Lechem Aponim, Memali Rochvoy, Shulchan, fill up the entire width of the Shulchan, Div Reb Yehuda. This is Reb Yehuda's understanding how the Lechem Aponim fit into the Shulchan. Remeir, however, is of the opinion that the amos that were used for the making of the Shulchan were amos that were made up of 6 tefachim. So if the Shulchan, as we said, the Torah teaches us, was 2 amos long and 1 amma wide, then the dimensions of the Shulchan will be Orcha Shneimasar, it'll be 12 tefachim long, V'rach V'shisha, by a width of 6. Lechem aponim, this dimension that we learned earlier, Rabbi Meir certainly agrees that the dimensions of the lechem aponim were Orcha Yasara V'rach V'chamisha, 10 tefachim long and 5 tefachim wide. Continues Rameyeh to teach us that noisin orchoi k'neged rach v'shul shulchan, they put in the length of the lechem to the width of the shulchan. But now, since according to Rameyeh, the length of the shulchan was 12, and the width of the shulchan was six. And the length of the lechem aponim was 10, so we only have an overage of 4, and therefore, according to Rameyer, they didn't have to bend up the sides of the lechem aponim, as Rabbi Yehuda said, 2.5 tefachim each side. Rather, according to Rameyer, they only had to bend up the side tefachayim mikan or tefachayim mikan. Furthermore, says Rameyeh, if the the width of the, if the length of the shulchan was 12, and they own, if the length of the shulchan was 12, we have two tefachim left over. I'm saying if the, they have two tefachim left over. Tefachayim rechavim be'emtza. There were two tefachim left over in the middle of the shulchan, because they didn't need to use up that entire, because according to him, the lechem was only five tefachim wide, and the shulchan was six. So you have two tefachim left over, one tefach from each row. Today, shtei ruach nishas behem, to have room for air to blow between these two rows, in order that the lechem should not get spoiled. And even though, as we're going to learn in the Mitzvah Shem and the Shir, there were nisim that anyway, with the lechem that remained fresh, ain't sanach mal anais, we don't want to rely on anais, and therefore they try to have air circulate to keep the bread fresh. Avishol says that this open two tefachim space between the two rows. That's where they put the two spoons of the levayna of the lechem upon it. Amroi, so they say to Avishol, Reik Vanemer, how could you say that the two bezichim were put between the two rows? Doesn't the pasuk say Nosata al hamarechus levana zaka, that the levana was put on top of the rows, not in between the rows? Responds Abishol Omer Lahem, Harek Fanemer, the Torah says, for all of Matan Menashe, when the Torah speaks about the camp of Klal Yisrael, it says the Matan Menashe was Olav to Matan Ephraim. Certainly it doesn't mean that Matan Menashe was on top of Matan Ephraim, rather means it was next to Matan Ephraim. Here too, we'll say that Olav, when the Torah speaks about the Shnei Bezichim, it doesn't mean that they were necessarily on top of the rolls of bread, they were next to the rolls of bread. Continues the Mishnah, the Arba Snifim Shazav HaYisham, there were four boards of made up of gold, Mufitzol Mereshayim, with projections going out on the top of them, Shayasamchem Behem, that they were used to support the lechem upon him, Shnayim will say, there's two for one row of lechem upon him, the Shnayim will say, there's two for the other row. Machloikis Rishayim, how to understand the boards. Tosfos seems to learn that the boards were only up to the bottom lechem. It's a difficult pshat, as we'll see from the way we'll learn the Gemara, and that's why most Mefarshim understand what the Gemara means here was that, what it means was that Rashi learned this way, that the boards went all the way up to the top of the rows of the lechem upon him. And then there's a further question exactly how it looked. Some Rishonim suggest that, as we're about to learn, there were poles that were put in between the lechem, between the breads that were put one on top of the other. And since there were poles that were put on top of the breads that were on top of one or the other, there were holes in these boards that were on the side of the lechem upon him, where they could push the poles in through. That's how many Rishonim learn. Others learn that there were pieces of support along the sides of the board, along the height of the boards, where they would put the poles on. Others say there were indentations in these boards, again, to support the poles. Because, says the Mishnah, Ve'esrim Rishmanim Kanim, there were 28 poles, Kechatzi Kana Cholo, each looked like a half a hollow reed, Abba Oslo said Zer, 14 poles for one row of breads, Ve'abba Oslo said Zer, 14 for the other row. And the Gemara Mitzvah will explain exactly how these 14 were divided. Furthermore, teaches us the Mishnah, Loi see the Kanim, not putting in the poles, nor v'loyin tilosam, taking them out, doicha as a Shabbos, may be done on Shabbos. We'll explain in Mitzvah Shema tomorrow's share as to why not. Ela nichnas me'erv Shabbos. On Erev Shabbos, the Kohen would go in for Shamtai and take out the poles, for Naisna and Arkash al Shulchan, and leave them along the length of the Shulchan. As the Mefarshim explain, as we'll see in the Gemara in a few moments, that the purpose of these poles were to have space between the breads in order that the breads not get spoiled, that they remain fresh, and therefore it isn't of such importance that it should be allowed to be done for Shabbos, and therefore the halacha is that it was done, the poles were taken out before Shabbos and they were put back only after Shabbos. Although I did see that the Michas Chinuch says this is only on a regular week, but says the Michas Chinuch, in a week where Yontif was either on Friday or Yontif was on Sunday, and therefore then if we're going to not do putting in the poles on Shabbos or Yontif, it will be that the poles were out for quite a while. And certainly, as we're going to learn, according to the letter of the law, the putting in and taking out of the poles may be done in Shabbos. Under such circumstances where we have this issue that if they're going to be out for too long, the bread may become moldy or not fresh, there the halacha will be that it may be done on Shabbos. Concludes the Mishnah. Kol ha-kelim shoy v'migdash, all kelim that were in the base of Migdash, orkan l'orach habayis, were all in toward the length of the base of Migdash. They were all on the east-west direction, which, as the Rishonim explained, refers to the shulchan that we've been discussing and the menorah. The mizbeach ha-pnimi was a perfect square, and the aron, which was in the kodesh ha-kedoshim, actually was not put east to west, but actually was placed north to south. But as the Mefarshim go on to explain, Makam Aron Einam and Amida, the Aron the regular halachas of don't apply by the Aron, and therefore the Aron, even though it's different, is not a question that it's violation of the rule that the Mishnah says. The Mishnah said, Kol HaMenachas Yesh Memasek Keli Bifnim. All the Menachas, the preparations were done in the Azara. Says the Gemara, Shalos Rebbe, they asked Rebbe Zuminayim, from where do we know this halacha, that the preparation of all Kavim Menachas were done in the Beis HaMikdash, in the Azara? Amalahem, so he responded, Hareyu Oimer, the Pasuk says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu transported Yecheskel to Eretz Yisrael, and he showed him in a Nevuah the dimensions of the Beis HaMikdash Shlishi. V'yomer Elai, Zeh HaMokoyim Ashuvash L'Shom HaKahanim. This is the place where the Kahanim will cook, as the Oshem V'Sechatos, as Shishiyofus HaMincha L'Voytri Hoitzi El Chotzer HaChetzoyna. So the Pasuk is comparing the Mincha to the Chatos for Oshem. Mincha Dumi the Oshem V'Chatos. Ma Oshem V'Chatos Tuna Keli, just like the Oshem V'Chatos were cooked in a keli, af mincha nami tuna keli requires a keli. And since it requires a keli, it's going to be a kli sharis that had to be used in the Azara. The Mefarshim point out that the comparison is not really a strong comparison, because perhaps the chatas for Asham were cooked in kli sharis, whereas the mincha wasn't necessarily done in a kli sharis. And if it wasn't necessarily done in a kli sharis, it won't necessarily have the same rule. And therefore the Achronim say that the comparison is for other halachas, that in the same place in the Azara where they cooked the chatas for Asham, that's the same place where they baked the mincha. Others say that just like the cooking of the Chatas and Asham only took place after the Zrikas Adam of the carbon, so too the cooking, the baking of the carbon mincha was only done after the Kemitzah was done. We learned in the Mishnah, HaShulchan Orchecha Asara, the length of the Shulchan Tent Fachim. Amr Rabbi Yochanan, the Divrei Oymet Chaim and Machzakoifu, according to the Man D'Amar, according to the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda in our Mishnah, that the Lechem upon him was bent up 2.5 tefachim, nimtza shulchan mekadesh chamisha asa tefachim lamala. The height of the shulchan is 15 tefachim, 6 times 2.5, and therefore the kedusha of the shulchan is up to 15 tefachim. And the Divrei Omer, according to the opinion of Rameya, that tefachim kaifel, that they bent up the lechem upon him 2 tefachim on each side, nimtza shulchan mekadesh shneimas tefachim lamala. 6 times 2, there were 2 rows of 6 chalas in each row. 6 times 2 equal 12. So the Farshim asked, what's the point of the Gemara saying that the height is 15 or the height is 12? Isn't that simple arithmetic? So the Farshim say, as we learned earlier in our Masechta, that the halacha is that anything that's put between the lechem becomes kadosh with the halacha of lifso belina, that if it's left overnight it becomes possible. So it's important for us to know the exact height, to know to which height will the halacha that we just spoke about be relevant. Furthermore, the Rishonim say that yes, Rabbi Yehuda taught us in the Mishnah that the lechem upon is bent up 2.5 tefachim. The Meir said it's bent up 2 tefachim. But that isn't seemingly the entire height of the lechem upon him. Because don't you have the flat part, the base, that also took up some height, which our Gemara is not taking into consideration at all? Say the Rishonim that even if we'll say that there was a, even as we're saying there's a height clearly to the lechem upon him, 2.5 or 1.5 or 2, the lechem upon him itself was very thin. As we discussed, the lechem upon him had to be matzah. And because the lechem upon him was very thin, therefore, there was no height on the bottom part of the lechem upon him. Ask the Gemara, but didn't we just learn the Mishnah, the Ikka Konim, that there were poles between the breads? Answer the Gemara, Konim Shekui Meshakavu. The breads, the poles sunk into the bread and didn't take up any height. Ask the Gemara, didn't we learn, my time, what was the reason that there were poles there, Mishimit Pusha Lechem, in order to not become, the bread not become moldy, so that air could travel through. But if we're going to have the poles going all the way into the bread, Soif, come out Pish Lechem. So the bread will become moldy. Answers the Gemara, the Magbalei Porta. They made sure that the pole didn't touch the bread all the way, so there should be room for the ear to go through. So now ask the Gemara, so it doesn't that small amount combine to add to the height? Vikul Parta answers the Gemara, Kivin do I have a tefach, since that all that doesn't amount to a tefach, that's why Lechashvelo it's not counted in the 15 or in the 12 that we just discussed. But ask the Gemara, Vikul Bezichin, didn't they put Bezichin on top of the bread? Shouldn't that add to the height? Answers the Gemara, the gavet the lechem have yesvi. The bezichin were put into the bread, v'lebahad the lechem have kaimi. Therefore, their height is included in the height of the bread. It doesn't add any additional height. But ask the Gemara, v'ka kronos. When we learned the Mishnah, then we explained that there were corners on each one of the bread with a certain height. Don't those corners add to the entire to the total height? Answers the Gemara. Kronis legavid the lechem kaiflahu. They bent the corners into the bread, and the lechem alayin naiflahu, and one loaf of bread rested on top of another loaf, and therefore the corners did not add to the height. But ask the Gemara ikam eskarta. The Torah says there was a frame around the shulchan. Doesn't that frame add to the height? Answers the Gemara, Commander Omer, as we're going to see, there's a machloikas tanoim. How the frame looked. Did the frame face downward or the frame face upward? Commander Omer, our Mishnah is following the man, this Rabbi Yochanan is following the Commander Omer, the Mizgarta Lamata Hoysa, that it was facing downward, and therefore it did not add to the height. However, ask the Gemara, Lamanda Omer, the Mizgarta Lamala Hoysa, even according to the Commander Omer, that the frame faced upwards, it wasn't that you had the frame, and then on top of the frame you had the lechem. Rather, perkudei have a be'arta. the frame faced outwards, and because it faced outwards, the lechem begav the shulchan aviyasev, the lechem sat on the surface of the shulchan. So when we count the height, we could count from the bottom of the lechem and don't have to take in consideration the frame. For Tanya, as the Bryson teaches us, Rav Yossi Omer Lo Hayu Shul Snifim. Rav Yossi's opinion is that there were no boards, as that we discussed in the Mishnah. Ella, according to Rav Yossi, Mizgarto Shul Shulchan Mamedes Es Alechem, the frame around the shulchan is what kept the lechem in supported. Omer Lo, to which the Chachamim disagree with Rav Yossi, as we said, it's Machlokes Tanoim, and their opinion is Mizgarto Lamata Hoysa, that the Mizgaris did face downwards. On Rav Yochanan, says the Gemara, the Divrei Haimer, Mizgarto Lamata Hoysa, according to the opinion that we just learned, the opinion of the Rabbanan, the frame is facing downward. Tavlo Hamisapeches, from here we'll see that if we have a wooden flat surface that can be used on either side, is tame, even though it doesn't have a receptacle. Because as we're going to see in a moment in the Gemara, the shulchan was susceptible to tumah. But if the mezgeris, if the frame is facing upwards, we could understand very easily why it's susceptible to tumah, because it's a keli that has a receptacle. It has this frame around it. But if we're going to say that the frame was facing downwards, how does it become susceptible to tumah? The divrei ayin mizgar to lamala hoysa tavla mispeches tibayla. So in other words, what the Gemara wants to say, if we're saying that the shulchan is susceptible to tumah, and we're saying that the frame faced downwards, we'll have a raya that even if it doesn't have a real receptacle, it's still mekabel tumah. Whereas, according to the Man D'Amar, the frame was facing upwards, we don't have a raya that something that doesn't have a receptacle, a wood keli that doesn't have a receptacle, is mekabel tumah. Said the Gemara, this is all based on our understanding that the shulchan is mekabel tumah. Mechlal, the shulchan bar kabel tumahu. It's obviously that we're learning that shulchan is susceptible to tumah. But ask the Gemara, isn't it a kli eitz osu l'nachasu? It's a kli eitz that's made to remain stationary. And we know that the halacha is that kol kli eitz osu l'nachas ein mekabel tumah. If you have a wooden keli that's made to remain stationary, it's not mekabel tumah. My time, why? Because dumi the sak binim. We need to have it similar to a sak. Mas sak is metantel moli v'reken. Well, the Torah uses the words mikol kli eitz oideged or a sak. So the Torah compares a kli eitz to a sak, just like a sak is something that's movable. Metaltel moli v'reken. As kol, only a wooden keli which is metaltel moli v'reken is susceptible to tumah. This is not metaltel moli v'reken, and it ought not to be susceptible to tumah. Of course, the Mefarshim asked the question: how can we say that the shulchan is kliyets osu l'nachas? Don't we know that we just discussed in our previous year that the Mishkan was moved, and therefore it should be considered kliyets osu l'nachas? So I saw a number of answers to this question. One answer is that the fact that the shulchan was moved when the maso is moved doesn't make it into a kliyets osu l'nachas, because its place is still kavua. The entire Mishkan moved, but the shulchan was still in its proper place. Another pshat is that since they moved, as we discussed, api Hashem, through the direction of Hashem, something that's moved because of the direction of Hashem is not considered moving. Another pshat is that since all of the kelim were moved, then we don't consider the shulchan, we don't, as a kli that's also to move, because it's not being moved by itself, it's being moved as part of the entire movement of the Mishkan. However, there is a very different approach in the Mefarshim to this Gemara, partially because of this question, that takes the approach that our Gemara is not referring to the Shulchan in the Mishkan. Rather, the discussion of our Gemara is with the Shulchan that was in the Beis HaMikdash. The Shulchan in the Beis HaMikdash clearly was not something that was meant to move, because as we know, the Beis HaMikdash did not move. Ask the Gemara, but even the Shulchan, Nami, Metalta Mali Vareitin, did move to Resh Lakish, as Resh Lakish taught us, the Amr Resh Lakish, Maidik Siv, Al Shulchan Atame, Mechlal, Tar Mechlal Dik Atame, is that indicate that it was subject to Tuma? How is it possible? Isn't it made to remain stationary? Al Mulamit, it teaches us, Shemagbino Seil Oil Regolim, they would lift up the Shulchan when the Oil Regolim would come to Yisrael, Myron Balechem, and they would show the Lechem, Vayrim Lechem, and they would say, Ru'u Chibaschem Lufnei Hamakim. See how much HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves you. Rav Shuben Levi, as Rav Shuben Levi taught us, Dar Rav Shuben Levi, Nes Godu Nas Balechem upon him. There was a tremendous Nes that happened with the Lechem upon him. Saluka Kisudura. When they took it out, it was warm, just like when it was put into the Shulchan. Shneimar, as the Pasuk says, Losum lechem chayim b'yoyim hilachay. It was taken out and shown to everybody that it was warm on the day, a week later when it was taken out, like it was on the day it was put in. Losum lechem b'yoyim hilachay. It was hot like it was on the day it was taken out. So we see that since it was carried, it was susceptible to Tumah. Now there's a question amongst Rishonim, exactly where did they take, how did they show the Shulchan? Some Rishonim are of the opinion that they didn't take the Shulchan outside of the Heichal, rather they lifted it up in the Heichal, and everybody standing in the Azara was able to see the Shulchan as it was lifted up, were able to see the Shulchan as it was lifted up with the warm bread. The Rambam, however, seems to learn that they took the Shulchan outside to the Azara to show to everyone else. Furthermore, the question is, how far in the Azara were the Yisraelim allowed to go to see this warm lechem? Some say that they were allowed to walk even into the area between the Ulam and the Mizbeach. There are other Rishonim that say that no, they cannot walk to that area, because the halacha is that that's an area that Yisrael may never walk. They have to stay on the other side of the Mizbeach. There is a Tosfos that says that the Man D'Omer that says in our Gemara that the lechem remained warm is only going according to the Man D'Omer. We discussed this in the previous year, that the lechem upon him was baked on Shabbos. But according to the Man D'Omer that says that the lechem upon him was baked on Friday, it didn't remain warm. And what our Gemara means when it discusses the nes that happened with the lechem upon him, it means that it remained fresh but not warm. There are others that say that even if it remained warm, even if it was baked on Erev Shabbos, it still remained warm. There are Mefarshim, going back to something we discussed a moment ago, that suggest that our Gemara is a raya that the lechem upon him was on the Shulchan, because the Gemara here is speaking about when the Beis HaMikdash, because in the time of the Mishkan, there was no Aliyah L'Regel. And therefore, since there was no Aliyah L'Regel, there's no point in the whole shot that they showed the Lechem upon him to the Oil L'Regel. There were no Oil L'Regel. The other Mefarshim would suggest that this was even during the Midbar. Maybe there was no official mitzvah, obviously, of Aliyah L'Regel when they were in the Midbar. They still did gather by the Mishkan on the Yom Tovim, and they took out the Shulchan to show them the nes of the Lechem upon him. Furthermore, the Mefarshim suggest that the Or Gedalia brings a Marsham that says that there was a special Chshivas, there was a special importance given to the Shabbos after Shavuos. And the question is, why? So some Mefarshim I saw explain, it goes back to what we learned in our Mishnah, because on Shavuos they had the Shtei Halechem. On Pesach, on Shavuos they had the Shtei Halechem. On Shabbos they had the Lechem upon him. And as our Mishnah already taught us, the dimensions of the Lechem upon him were actually larger than the dimensions of the Shtei Halechem. And they were trying to teach him, as great as the Yom Tov Shavuos is with the Shtei Halechem, Shabbos is even greater. Shabbos has in it the Lechem Aponim, which are bigger dimension. But the Marsham takes a different approach. So he says, if that's Pshat, then one makes the Shabbos after Shavuos more important than all other Shabbosim. And therefore he takes the following approach. He says that we just learned that on the Shabbos of Yom Tov, they would take out the Lechem Aponim and show the Lechem Aponim to all the Oilei Regel. So he says, Pesach, Sukkot, there has to be a Shabbos during those Yom Tovim, because the Yom Tovim are 7 days long. Shavuos, which is only a one-day Yom Tov, doesn't necessarily have to be on Shabbos. So the question is, the Lechem Aponim, as we've been learning, was the avoid of the Lechem Aponim was done on Shabbos. But there was no, Shavuos didn't necessarily have a Shabbos. So he explains that the Shabbos after Shavuos, everybody would remain in Yerushalayim in order to see the Lechem Aponim, the freshness, the warmth still of the Lechem Aponim, the smoke emanating to show the nace of the Lechem Aponim. So therefore there was a special Shivas, there was a special importance to the Shabbos after Shavuos, where they showed this to the entire congregation. But ask the Gemara, the Tepik Lemishim Tzipri, why are we having a discussion about the Shulchan, if susceptible to Tumah or not? Why don't we focus on the coating of the Shulchan? Miloi Tanan, HaShulchan V'adufki, Shenifchasu, we have a wooden table or a wooden chair that become reduced, a shechip v'shayis, or the cover with marble, v'shayben mokim anachas kaisis, and they're still remaining on them the place for cups, tameim, they're still susceptible to tumah. If they, even though it's broken, but if they're still somewhat usable, then it's susceptible to tumah. Similarly, if the marble doesn't cover the wood completely, there's a wooden surface large enough for cups, it's still considered a wood keli, which is susceptible to tumah. Yudam, the shear isn't just for cups. Makom anichas tichos, you have to have also room for places of meat and bread. Shirin, that means that if there's that much room, it's susceptible to tumah. Loy shire, it's not susceptible to tumah. Now here we're talking about where there's marble covering the wood, when marble is not susceptible to tumah. It becomes a stone utensil. Similarly, if you have a gold covering, isn't the raya that we should follow the covering? And since the shulchan was coated by gold, it should be considered a gold keli, not a wood keli. V'chitema, if you'll suggest, kamet tzipi oimed, kamet tzipi she'en oimed, there's a difference if the coating is attached to the keli or it's not attached to the keli. Is a difference if the plating is attached or not. Does it make a difference if it covers the rim or not? And he says, it doesn't matter if the coating is attached. It doesn't make a difference if it covers the rim or not. So if we see, so why don't we follow the Geld Keli? So how do we see that we're using the Shulchan as a model to what is Mekabel Tumah or not? This is a very different situation. V'chi Tema, and if you'll suggest that the Atzei Shita M'chshiv V'lei Batli, that the Shaitim are considered Chashiv, and that's why they don't become Babel. Hanich L'Resh Lakish, this could be understood according to Resh Lakish, Tomah, Loishan Abaklei Askagus Habayim Medina Sayam. The way that we say the wood becomes Babel to the plating, only with a Kli Askagus wood, which is not very significant. Avakli Mimismus, but if the wood is made, it's made out of Mimismus, Chashivi V'loi Batli, then it's always considered a wood Kali Shapir. Then we could understand why the Shulchan is still considered a wood Kali, because it was made out of a very expensive wood, and therefore it's not considered gold because of the plague. However, it says the Gemara, Elo Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Kli Mimismus Nami Batli, that even if it's made out of expensive wood, if it has a plating, we consider the keli made up of the material that the plating is made up of. Michael and Maimer, what's the question? It's not a kli eitz, it's a kli zov. Answers the Gemara, Shani Shulchan. The Shulchan is certainly considered a kli eitz. The Rachmana kar yeitz. The Torah calls it a kli eitz. Shenemar, Hamizbeach Sholosh Amos Gavoya. The pasuk is considered a shulchan, and therefore a shulchan shall eat, and therefore it's certainly considered kli eitz. The only point is, as we just learned, it's not considered kli eitz because it was moved to show the oily regard.